We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
This is WSV News Radio, courtesy of the Solid Verbal College Football Podcast. My name is Ty Hildebrandt. That gov there is Dan Rubenstein. You give us a download, we'll give you the college football world. Before we get into it, Dan, don't forget to go on out to our website at solidverbal.com. That, of course, is where you can find all the links to download and subscribe and listen to this podcast. We put out 3 episodes per week on the public feed Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, this being our new show. We're going to talk with Bill Connolly momentarily, Bill Connolly of ESPN.com, about the news of the week, what it all means from an SP Plus statistical standpoint. We'll get into all of that and much, much more. Before we do, though, outside of SolidVerbal.com, go to SolidSaturday.com. That's where you can find our Saturday morning live stream. We start up every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. We walk you through all of the pertinent college football windows, help you map out your day accordingly so that you get the optimal viewing experience. Also, go on out to verballers.com, V-E-R-B-A-L-L-E-R-S.com. You get all of our shows a little bit early, including this one. You also get access to our Discord server where you can chat amongst the people and our teeming community of Solid Verbal followers and listeners and super fans. And you just get access to a great community of folks that are every bit as passionate about college football as you are. And of course, on top of that, we did do a bonus show. Did a bonus Q&A show. We call it the Bruin A. We also did a bonus show in reaction to the first round of college football playoff rankings, which we're going to discuss here in a lot more detail with our friend Bill Connolly, Dan.
Correct. I have nothing to add or correct about what you just said.
So at this hour, we have playoff rankings, your top four per the College Football Playoff Committee is Georgia, Alabama, Michigan State, and Oregon. Some eyebrows raised as Cincinnati comes in initially at number 6. Wake Forest comes in at number 9. We'll talk about that and much, much more with Bill Connolly. The other news of the week, and we talked about it briefly on the preview show, Gary Patterson. Gary Patterson and TCU mutually parting ways. They're going to be in the hunt for a new coach. We'll talk with Bill in a little bit more detail, Dan, about where it all went wrong.
Agree.
Joining us now, Bill C., Bill Connolly, still on your side. He is joining us from his comfy abode here in Missouri, right, Bill?
Forever, apparently.
By the way, not a lot of people have that the last name initial associated with their first name. Like a couple of Spice Girls, if I remember correctly. There's like a Mel B.
Mel B.
And maybe another Mel C. But like there aren't that many, Are there? Sheila E., who's like a famous drummer.
I mean, look, I'm
Cardi
okay
B.
with anything that ties
There's
me.
There's Cardi B., but I don't think that's her real name.
I'm okay with anything that ties me to Sheila E. That's fine.
That's true. She really gets after it. Sorry, Ty, you can continue now with your actual professionalism.
The Bill C. from ESPN.com joining us as he has all season long on a fairly regular basis talk through what's going on in the world of college football. So the news, I guess, since we last spoke, there's been a lot of it, but why don't we start with the TCU thing?
Okay.
So the news broke earlier this week that TCU and Gary Patterson would be mutually parting ways. As we've discussed on this show and as many other shows have seemingly discussed as well, TCU's been in this weird kind of state for the last couple seasons. I think from afar, if you don't pay super close attention to what's going on, it's really just felt like they're very, very inconsistent. But as you dive in, as I know you have, what has been going on at TCU that led to this ultimate point?
Well, the more I think about it, the more I think it's as much as anything like a talent and depth issue. Depth more than talent, maybe. Just because, you know, it has been like 4 years of extremely like hovering right around 500, which honestly is still way better than, you know, they were doing before he got there as defensive coordinator in 1998. But it was clearly not at the level that they had established in previous years. And, you know, before this season, I think as much as anything, it was about, you know, the offense trailed off. The offense wasn't, you know, keeping up its end of the bargain, which, of course, when you've made your hay as the defensive innovator of the 21st century, then it would make sense that that's where you fall off. But this year, it flipped around entirely. He made some staff changes. He got, Zach Evans is awesome. Like they've done better offensively. Less, you know, that rating's fallen a little. Let's see, they're 41st right now in offensive SP plus. They were in the 20s there for a little while, and then they scored 12 points on Kansas State.
I was gonna say, yeah,
it's absolutely improved, and the defense has fallen off a cliff. And injuries have played a role in that for sure, but they just haven't, they just don't have much to offer. They're not, you know, they give up a ton of, like when you make a successful play on them, it's a big one, which isn't necessarily unique for their system and the aggressiveness that it entails, but they're not, they're turnovers, three and out, stuff like that. They're just not making any plays defensively. And when a guy does what he did and innovates and changes college football, basically with the way he played defense, and everybody starts adapting some of the things he's been doing, it can be like a Chip Kelly thing where you lose your tactical edge and don't necessarily create another one. But they were awesome defensively last year. It's not like that's been the cause of this 4 year kind of mediocre issue. And that makes me think it's a talent as much as anything. They just didn't have enough of it. They didn't necessarily maintain the pieces that they needed. And maybe they would have got him back if they kept him, but I don't think it surprised anybody that he ended up leaving.
I know you've talked in the past, Bill, about teams who move on from their coach tend to swing pretty drastically in the other direction. So Gary Patterson, defensive-minded coach, maybe the defense hasn't been up to snuff lately,
right?
But now it seems as if you believe reports, maybe Sonny Dykes would be the next coach. Obviously very offensive in his mindset when it comes to college football. I mean, I know you're not breaking coaching news, but who in your view is the kind of guy that TCU should get to run that program?
I mean, it is kind of Sonny Dykes' moment right now, isn't it?
Yeah,
he can get a raise from SMU. He can go to Texas Tech. He can go to TCU. He can choose his future right now. It's a good time. Everybody's looking for the super Texas-oriented guys now, and there aren't many of those. So, great time to be Sonny. I always hate the hire the opposite of your ex kind of thing that we've talked about before, and you know, going from Bo Pelini to Mike Riley and whatnot, and how that I hate anything that just limits your horizons as far as who you might hire as a replacement. And so I would hope that they don't kind of, you know, Sonny Dykes has a lot to offer, so maybe there's more to it than that. But I would hope that they're looking at just like, who can lead us into the rest of this this new Big 12 and all this. And I would hope they're just looking at it from a pretty open-minded standpoint. But I mean, man, it's hard to tell. I mean, it's just basically a good job, right? You know, they've got solid facilities that have improved massively because of Gary Patterson. They've got Patterson did them a favor by trailing off at the end. So it's not a straight up like succeeding a legend and you have no chance to succeed situation. You can go above 500 as, you know, at TCU. But I am very curious what their approach is, because in theory, they can sell a lot. Not only the facilities, they're going to pony up, I'm sure, to whatever degree. Although that's a bad thing to use for an SMU rival, I guess. But they can now sell the fact that they're going to be in a power conference. Technically, I think Big 12 will still be considered a power conference. It should be anyway. And they're going to be in the most open and competitive power conference in the country. Anybody, like any of 6 to 8 programs, when you're looking at it from year to year, could theoretically win that. And for a power conference, that's crazy to say. So, I mean, you can sell competition, you can sell Texas, you can sell good facilities and money and whatever else. And it seems like a good job to me. We'll see.
Yeah. No, and it's one of those things too, and this isn't just for TCU, it's for any of these jobs that are opening up, but especially in the Big 12, whatever the Big 12 looks like moving forward. We've seen guys now, whether it's Mike Gundy turning over the defense to a really good defensive coordinator and seeing Oklahoma State maintain a high level in a different way because of defense. We've seen Iowa State emerge largely because of defense, so they've recruited and developed good offensive players. And the big story in terms of ascension from a really down place has been Baylor, both with Matt Rhule and now Dave Aranda, trusting a defensive coordinator type to run the team who brings in smart offensive people, which hasn't always been the case at Oklahoma State recently, as we've had some down offense. But it seems like at a place like TCU, it's not like there's a formula, but we know what Gary Patterson did in being a defensive-minded dude who trusts good offensive minds when TCU is at its very best, be it Justin Fuente before when they go to the Rose Bowl, be it, you know, these coordinators. When you look across the landscape, and especially look at the coaches who are available, because we're going to be looking at a sport that has maybe the most Power Five jobs available in recent history. Do you see the names that make sense for a lot of these teams and the names being talked about? Do they fit that mold, not necessarily of defense, but somebody who comes in with a very specific specialty who's done a good job of trusting a coordinator and delegating and keeping their hands off? Does that seem to be the wave, or am I just extrapolating here?
Well, I mean, maybe that's the wave, right? You could maybe make a case that that's the wave right now, because there isn't a distinct, you know, it's not 10 years ago where the spread is exploding, especially in Texas, and you need to be at the front of the train in terms of how your offense is operating. We're in, I don't know the best word for it. It's not a lull by any means, but basically, like, the innovation has happened, and now we're into the other half of the life cycle where, you know, defenses are now adjusting and all that. So, yeah, there might not be as much of a direct tactical edge to follow right now, where you can just hire this guy and you're ahead of the game. Right. So in that sense, yeah, maybe it's a deal of who can legitimately run a program better, who can hire really smart assistants and develop guys really well, and all those other things that always matter, but maybe they matter a little more right now.
Yeah, and especially when you look across the sport, there's no right answer, right? Wake Forest is winning a ton of games with big offense that is unique. Right. This has been a Wake Forest team that has scored points and put up yards and has struggled to put up consistent defenses. We're seeing a Michigan State team that is winning with strong defense and the ability to generate timely big plays. But it's Mel Tucker trusting an offense and empowering an offense. And so when you look at the top of the sport right now, not in terms of trends, but in how of these and how certain teams have become top 10, according top 12, top 15, according to the playoff rankings. Is there a path that you can see that some of these top teams that who have come out of kind of some depth, some really recent depths, is there a through line with any of those teams?
Yeah, Wake Forest is certainly an interesting one. Not only that they are winning primarily with offense, but you know the offense they run, those the RPOs that give me anxiety attacks because they just stand there at the mesh point for like 8 seconds before actually doing anything. Every time they do it, it looks wrong. It looks like something went wrong, and then it's a 45-yard gain.
Yeah.
But you know, that they are pretty unique in a lot of ways. And I mean, they're not, for being honest, they're a top 30 team in terms of like, you know, predictive quality. They're not they're not a genuine title contender, at least not yet. But they do have a top 10 offense, and that's gotten them very far in an ACC with a sudden leadership vacuum. But I mean, I do think, you know, it is certainly, when you look at the top of the rankings, it is a bunch of delegators and it's a bunch of just good program runners at the moment. Because that's, I mean, Luke Fickell, maybe you can certainly make a case that he's doing some really, really, you know, cutting edge things on defense, but they're certainly not doing any on offense. And they have maybe the best non-power conference team or program right now that has existed since Boise State and TCU a decade ago. You know, not that the committee's watching them at all, but I mean, you know, you look at that. I'm looking through the list now. I mean, you've got heavy duty recruiting above all else, guys. You've got Michigan State doing this interesting thing, and Michigan State again is better than Wake Forest, I think, but not top five on paper yet.
Right.
So we'll see if they can continue this, or if we're just talking about something where we're talking about them and all the amazing things they did, and then they go 9-3 or something. But I don't think there are any through lines right now. The most interesting teams, the most different teams in the rankings right now are all pretty different. Michigan State kind of patching together transfers and explosiveness and the leftovers of a D'Antonio defense. You know, Cincinnati doing what they're doing. Wake Forest playing all offense. Oklahoma State playing all defense all of a sudden. I don't necessarily think there's a through line other than good coaches figuring out good answers.
Are you a bigger believer when you look at these teams, you say Michigan State's good and they're better than Wake Forest, but not necessarily a top five team. When you look at the underlying numbers, when you watch the games, are you biased towards an offense? Are you biased towards a defense when you're looking at teams who you believe in more thoroughly to survive three straight months of being in the spot?
Well, I think this year, I don't think it necessarily pays to be biased toward offense like maybe it did in other years recently.
Sure.
But I do think I am biased towards the teams that I know can move the ball when they have to, which is, you know, so Michigan, not quite there in terms of, they can move the ball, but, you know, putting the ball in the end zone remains an issue for them when they get down there. Texas A&M kind of the same way. Cincinnati, I've been on the mountaintop yelling about Cincinnati for a year now, and they still have these little offensive funks that scare the crap out of me sometimes. We've seen them the last 2 weeks. So I definitely, you can win with defense, and it's amazing. There are some really, really fun defenses to watch this year, but I need to trust your offense a little more. Just to do certain things. And Georgia's in such a weird spot right now. They're eighth in offensive SP plus, and I still don't know if we can trust Georgia's offense, because you have to be able to score 30 plus points on their defense, and maybe two teams in FBS can do that this year. They won't play one of them until the SEC championship, and they wouldn't play the other until maybe the playoff in Ohio State.
There's a team who arguably is one of the more fascinating teams when you take into account their on-field performance, the drama involved in the end of their games, and the fact that they finish exclusively playing good teams. And I've actually seen multiple pieces this week talking about underlying numbers and how confounding the underlying numbers are. And that's the Nebraska Cornhuskers, okay? They finish with Ohio State, Iowa, and Wisconsin. They have fielded a defense that cannot be described as anything less than good. It's a good defense, right? They make plays, and an offense that generates big plays that the underlying numbers actually like a lot about this offense, and yet they're 3-6. My question to you is, describe in detail, to whatever extent you can, why? And also, are there any other teams that should be clearly better than their record indicates? I know that you have the second order win stat and everything like that, but is there even a team comparable to what Nebraska has done this year in terms of they seem good, but they don't win?
Yeah, I mean, you ever want to talk about intangibles? Obviously, as a stats person, I'm supposed to hate that word and everything.
right.
But if you ever want to talk about the existence of intangibles, like Nebraska right now is the ultimate example, because they do. I mean, they... Three current playoff top 10 teams. They lost by 7 points, 3 points, and 3 points. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Minnesota's smoking hot. They lost by 7 points. Easily could have won that game. Purdue I mean, well, I mean, Purdue beat Iowa at the least, even if they haven't been all that consistent.
And Oregon State.
And Oregon State. So they would be a Pac-12 contender right now. And it took a lot for Nebraska to not win that game. But that's been the case every single game they've lost this year. And when you watch it play out with, you know, granted, the special teams errors change from week to week. There is that. Mm-hmm. But they always make special teams errors at the wrong time. And Adrian Martinez, for all of the obvious explosiveness he has and the really the solid across the board stat line he has this year, you know, he's going to throw a pick or drop the ball out of the blue like he did against Michigan. And it's none of that should be sustainable. But when you see it six times in nine games, plus all the close games they lost in previous years, I mean, I'm really curious what Nebraska does here, because on one hand, you could easily say, do you remember Matt Wells at Utah State? Mm-hmm. You could easily say that this is shaping up to be a Matt Wells situation where they, you know, he takes over for Gary Anderson, does well for a minute, and then just hits reset, builds his program his way, loses an incredible number of close games in a row. I don't even remember what it was, 9 or 10, maybe something like that. They go 3-9 in 16. They go 6-7 in 2017, and then they go 11-2 in 2018 because they both operated better in close games and were good enough to avoid close games altogether, which I don't think Nebraska is ever going to be that good in a conference as good as the Big Ten.
Right.
But there's nothing saying this has to continue, but there's also nothing saying that the next guy's not going to do better. Like if you with what Scott Frost has built, you'd feel kind of bad about not letting him kind of see it through. But at the same time, if you're hiring, if you decide to change coaches, a lot of guys could walk right in the door and inherit a very good program and maybe do more with them. And so, like, I think if I'm the athletic director at this stage, which is the first time I've ever said the words, if I'm Trev Alberts, but like that's, I don't know. I think I would probably be leaning toward a change at this point. But if you wanted to keep him and commit and maybe make sure he's got what he needs from a special teams coaching standpoint,
yeah,
I think you could certainly make the case that it would cost you less. You wouldn't have to have a buyout or anything like that. And it might pay off as soon as next year.
Should also add, by the way, Syracuse is like 3 minutes away from being 9-0. Like it's a very strange thing, but in terms of like their Florida State, Wake Forest, and who they lost to, Rutgers, I think early on, like their actual margin of losing and their year of scoring is,
yeah,
they are like a very long glass of water away from being undefeated.
So I just looked at the second order wins for the year.
Yeah.
And this is, of course, the, you know, with my post game win expectancy number, you know, I feel I have to do the quick background at all times.
Please.
I have a post game win expectancy where, you know, you basically take a lot of the stats that go into SP Plus and you say, you know, toss them up in the air and you say, okay, with these stats, you could have expected to win this game X percent of the time. Like, Cal Davis versus Tulsa earlier this year was like 99% yes. Tulsa, but we got to witness the 1% of UC Davis winning that game.
Mm-hmm.
If you add those percentages up, you kind of get a second order win total kind of number where, you know, you can see that, for instance, Nebraska, their second order win total this year is 5.7. Which means that SP Plus kind of sees them as a 5-4 or 6-3 team, mm-hmm. not 3-6. Some of the other outliers right now, Western Kentucky should be 6-2 right now, not 4-4. Their win total, or their second order win total, is 6.1. So they're over two wins below where they should be. Marshall should be about 7-1, not 5-3.
Wow.
Ohio, and then you got some bad teams like Ohio should at least have two or three wins, not one. Arizona should probably have one or two wins, not zero. But those are the main. Nebraska, Western Kentucky, and Marshall are the ones that stand out on that end. The other end, you've got Utah State, ironically enough.
Yeah.
Should probably be about 3-5 right now. They're 2.9 wins ahead of where the stats think they should be at 6-2. Northern Illinois with their little, and this doesn't include last night's game, but with their incredible run of comeback wins, they were 6-2, probably should have been about 4-4. And our friends Wake Forest really probably should have been about 6-2 and not 8-0 right now, but it's a lot more fun that they're 8-0 right now.
Definitely.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
That is a perfect setup, Bill, to my next question.
All right.
The other elephant in the room is that we had the first round of college football playoff rankings revealed on Tuesday evening.
Yep.
Your top 10, I'll just recite it here for anyone listening along in the car or at home. Georgia, Alabama, Michigan State, Oregon, that's your top four, followed by Ohio State at 5, Cincinnati at 6, Michigan at 7, Oklahoma at 8, the previously aforementioned Wake Forest Demon Deacons at number 9, and Notre Dame at number 10. So, really high level. Obviously, these rankings put you in a very difficult situation. I'm sure people come screaming to you, Bill. Based on what you saw from the committee in this first batch, what did you agree with? What did you not agree with?
Well, I don't agree with the apparent assumption that losses shouldn't count. Like, this is the first time a team with a loss has ranked in the top two of the first rankings in a given year. I have no idea why Alabama's, like, the only way Alabama should be second is if we really don't care that they lost a game. And, I mean, we're picking four teams. Like, it feels like losses should actually matter and that, you know, we should still be giving preference to the teams that don't have them. And that was not the case at all when you look at 3 1-loss teams in the top five and then 3 unbeaten teams between 6 through 9. I mean, among other things, it puts the committee in a really weird spot. I know that, you know, we do it from scratch every single week and all that. But I mean, if you look at, you know, a lot of teams winning out that are in the top 10 right now, are we going to have 11-2 Alabama fourth and then like 13-0 Oklahoma fifth and 13-0 Cincinnati sixth and 13-0 Wake Forest seventh? Like, why are we playing games? And I always feel funny at this time of year because, you know, I get told watch the games nerd all the time. Get your head out of the spreadsheets. But like, It feels like a lot of this stuff happens on spreadsheets. And, you know, like, or sorry, I realize it's who okay. I'm talking to right now. Like Oregon being ahead of Ohio State, despite the fact that they've looked like a top four team once all year. Yeah. It really was like Ohio State's here, so we have to put Oregon one step above them, and that's great. You know, if they don't start looking better, they're not going to get to 12-1, and it won't matter. But they kind of, if they play like a top five team moving forward, they're, you know, that's great. They're in a good position, but I wouldn't have put them there. It was just kind of, I don't know. This is really hard, and I understand it's hard.
It is.
But when you look at these rankings, you see Alabama second, and you see that, you know, when they say we pick the best teams, not the most deserving, it's about best, best, best. Well, that makes sense that Alabama's second then, but you can't justify putting Michigan State third if you're only looking at best. You can't really justify putting Oregon fourth if you're just looking at best. So it is this really hard mix of resume and quality and head-to-head and I disagreed with a lot of it, I'll just say.
Yeah. So what would your four be? What would your four be based on the mix of eye test, resume, underlying numbers?
Well, we do a quick little thing at the end of every Saturday night at ESPN where we all just put in our top four. And I think the top four I had last week was Georgia, Michigan State, Cincinnati, Oklahoma, just unbeatens across the board, basically. Like, eventually, I understand, like, when Alabama, if they get to 12-0 and they, or 12-1 and they beat Georgia, then fine, they're probably top four. But I just cannot justify putting a one-loss team that high right now. The more I think about it, I mean, I think you could absolutely justify Cincinnati being ahead of Michigan State, just from the perspective of, number one, if it's a best thing, they rank higher in SP+, they rank higher in FPI. They've been a better team top to bottom, even if they've kind of they've fallen into funks offensively the last couple of weeks. And then they have a better top win. I mean, beating Michigan slightly at home versus beating Notre Dame handily on the road, Cincinnati has the top win too. So I would have no problem ranking.
And a better win, by the way, better win against a common opponent in Indiana.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Yeah, I forgot about that. Michigan State has already played them too. Yeah, 2015 or whatever. So, yeah, I wouldn't mind that at all. Ranking the unbeatens, I would put it Georgia, Cincinnati, Michigan State, Oklahoma, Wake Forest. That's fine. Mm-hmm. And then it just becomes like with the one-loss teams, and I know I'm different about this, and that's fine. But it really just comes down to if you've lost, if you don't have that the ability to say like we get to play until we lose a game because we haven't lost one yet, then it really just comes down to how frequently awesome have you looked? And
great.
Alabama or Ohio State should be in either order there at the top to me. And after that, like, I think you could make the case for Michigan and Notre Dame ahead of Oregon at the very least, just for how consistently good they've looked. Mm-hmm. And then it's up to you how you mash those together, I guess. But I, you know, to me, I would still be looking at Georgia, Cincinnati, Michigan State, and either, if not Oklahoma at that point, then Alabama or Ohio State.
Yeah, I guess Toledo hasn't had a shot at Oregon yet, right? We already know they can keep it close against Notre Dame. So
that's right.
Who knows what Toledo could do against the Ducks?
Who knows? Bill, we mentioned it on the last interview we did with you, the 2007-ing purportedly of the 2021 season. We have seen a lot of chaos. Dan and I have all sorts of theories as to why. One of our leading theories is just that there is so much instability at quarterback. What you've seen to some extent at Oklahoma is obviously not the norm, but there are plenty of programs out there that just can't really get that quarterback spot sorted out, and it's produced some very interesting results. How close are we now as we enter into the month of November to seeing full-on chaos? And by full-on chaos, I mean my personal dream scenario where you've got Alabama losing to Georgia. You've got the Big Ten East cannibalizing itself. We've got Oklahoma getting a loss along the way, which is entirely possible given their schedule.
Yep.
And then we are left with a very uncomfortable spot for the committee, whereby Cincinnati is unbeaten and Wake Forest is unbeaten.
Yep.
What is your dream chaos scenario at this point, and how realistic is it?
I mean, I think I've certainly grown a little less confident in chaos over the last couple of weeks. Now, granted, Ohio State didn't look quite as good as I expected them to against Penn State, or maybe the opposite. Maybe Penn State just looked really good. I don't know. Sure. But that game was closer than I really anticipated it being. And so I was, you know, especially with the red zone troubles that Ohio State had in that game. And that's been kind of the defining factor for everybody this season, is how well do you do in the red zone and how well do you defend the red zone? Because Georgia doesn't do all that well in the red zone. They could easily fall into a Michigan scenario of settling for field goals. I mean, you could have, 27 minutes into the Florida game, you could talk yourself into a Georgia's messing around and could find themselves in trouble kind of scenario until they were no longer in trouble, I guess. But, you know, Ohio State struggled in the red zone that game. Georgia struggled against Florida. Like, Michigan obviously struggles in the red zone. That has been one of the underlying factors. But I just think at this point, like, I, you know, for all I can complain about Alabama ranking as high as they do and Ohio State ranking as high as they do right now. Well, I guess I didn't complain about Ohio State as much, but they're really good. And there have been three teams that have stood out from the pack this season. And you're seeing it in like SP Plus, where Ohio State and Georgia are above 29, Alabama's at 26.7, nobody else is above 21.1. Like, the stratification there is clear. So I would assume Ohio State, like, I feel pretty comfortable thinking Ohio State wins out at this point. Georgia, We'll see about Georgia, Alabama, but I do think, well, number one, I think Wake Forest loses anyway, so it doesn't matter. I think Oklahoma needs their typical November magic, otherwise they're going to lose as well. And I think we're probably kind of cruising towards a pretty comfortable Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, and one other team scenario. And apparently that team's not going to be Cincinnati no matter what. So I don't know what team that might be.
Bill, you don't wager on games, but you track things should you wager on games via SP Plus.
Yep.
And it's extremely volatile, as all things wagering are, right?
Yep.
That you'll hit weirdly like 73% in an early window and then 40% in a late window, whatever. What have you learned this year about both SP Plus as relates to the spread and or over-unders? I don't know how detailed you measure things with regard to wagering. And now that we are 10 weeks in, if you were handed $1,000 and said, here's what I'm going to do with this money based on what I know about the sport this year, what would you do?
Well, first of all, I've definitely learned that, I was told a couple of years ago at some point, SP Plus moves the lines, blah, blah, blah. I never know how seriously to take that. But every single week that goes by, a higher percentage of games with the midweek spread is within about 3 points of SP Plus. And what that means is there's little edge with SP Plus. If the line's going to basically be, injury adjusted SP Plus, that makes it awfully hard to beat. And so it's performing considering how much we didn't know about how the preseason projections would pan out and everything, having a game to game error rate, which is kind of the way you evaluate your system outside of how it's doing against the spread, it's under 13 points per game, which is, if you look at prediction tracker, like that's very high level. So I think it's performing really well. It was at like 12.4 back in 2019 before stupidity and chaos and everything hit after that.
Right.
But it's clearing the bar I want it to clear. And it's performing really well. And the last 2 weeks, it's gone 44, 46% against the spread because the spread is right there next to it. And you're just basically flipping coins. So, whatever that means, it makes the lines very hard to beat. You've seen a lot of pretty high level handicappers and whatnot really, really struggling with college football this year. Not our friend Bud Elliott.
Jeff Schwartz, by the way. He was like 15-4 with the Pac-12 at a certain run. But that's all he does. He just studies the Pac-12 all the time. Right. He's on Pac-12 radio and he makes public picks, whatever. And that's when you obviously bet against somebody when they go on a run like that.
That's right.
As we know, there is a mean.
There's certainly money out there to be won still, but if you want me to feel as comfortable as possible betting $1,000 at this stage, I think I would just stick to betting over on most of the games where the point total is like 40, betting under on most of the games where the point total is like 75, and just riding with that. And it's tricky.
So I have a couple of demands on this as well. So one of the things that I noticed, and it's not statistically significant, but my belief system after 6 or 7 weeks when I was looking at the teams who had performed well against the spread was, and I'm able to look at some of these numbers, is the teams who have been recently disappointing, who have turned things around on defense, especially as it relates to stopping big plays and rushing the passer, have performed especially well. Mm-hmm. I'm not demanding you tell me that this is the correct way to approach wagering, because there is no correct approach to wagering. But in the way that your five factors that you looked at, like these are the five factors that affect winning the most, and it's right, it's winning the explosive play battle, it's turnover margin, et cetera, et cetera. Have you done models? Have you run exercises looking at various elements of your SP Plus and measuring that against teams who succeed against the spread? Maybe you're just going to say no, and so then my follow-up question is moot, but is there anything there? Because I think that's the magic bullet, essentially, right? That in terms of wagering and advanced stats, that's the, if you're hitting on 71%, you're a billionaire.
Right. If you're hitting on 71%, give me a call, but... Like, it's just so hard. It's always going to be hard with college football, because in no other sport on the planet would we think of two games as a trend for anything.
Right.
And we're so desperate to figure out trends, we almost don't have a choice but to treat them like a trend in college football, because that's us 1/6 of the season.
Yes.
And so what happens is you end up kind of following trends along, and you know the teams that are improving, you hop on them, and then they disappoint, and so on and so forth. I don't know if there's any magic bullet as far as, I mean, it would make sense that, you know, if your defense, like in Oklahoma last year, was having terrible big play issues and then stopped having big play issues, then suddenly, you know, you're getting an extra 3-4 points there of value. But it's really hard, other than really closely tracking personnel changes. I don't know if there's anything else from a statistical standpoint that would really bear out nationwide. But I mean, the personnel changes, like OU last year, getting Perkins back midseason and suddenly being twice the defense, like that kind of tracks, and you could probably find some value in that way. But
which is why Bud crowdsources injury news every Sunday afternoon.
I love that he's doing that.
Yeah,
because we somehow in college football, like every year that goes by, we have less injury information.
It's amazing.
That is, you know, at the NFL level, they got to, you know, report this, and they got to be relatively semi-honest about injuries and whatnot. And now, like every single year that goes by, fewer coaches share depth charts because God forbid, like that's, you know, God
forbid. So if you're a professional gambler, here's what you do. Here's my plan for you. Go to every single strength and conditioning conference and befriend as many humans as possible.
God. Yeah.
That's the actual, is that not the move?
Yeah, being able to trust high level sources as to whether player A is playing or not and how player B is coming along. Like that's going to be your best way to figure out. Cause I mean, yeah, like sometimes three games is really an honest trend and thing, and everything's looking up or down for a given school. And sometimes it's absolute noise and garbage. And the only way you're going to know is to know how the personnel is behind the scenes.
Bill, let me close out my round of questioning with this. We've talked a lot about Cincinnati. I want to go a little bit deeper into the future and talk about next week with regard to Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
The city of Cincinnati hosting a rather big soccer qualifying matchup between the United States, our United States, and El Tri, Mexico. That game being played in TQL Stadium, which is apparently a thing that I did not know about. How are you feeling about that game? What are your numbers saying? Like, what do I need to do? We need to talk privately about, you know, how we feel about this game and this window of qualifying. Where are we at here? What's the status?
I'm not going to claim to feel great. It doesn't matter if they beat Jamaica after that. It doesn't matter whether what happens in this game, at least not really. But yeah, like among other things, there were a lot of good feelings derived from two matches over the summer in which U.S. had none of the ball and really shouldn't have won either game, but had great goalkeeping and just a couple of perfect scoring maneuvers, and therefore went, beat Mexico twice, and everybody was feeling great about the U.S. again. They really weren't the better team in either game. They haven't been the better team in qualifying. So I don't feel amazing. It would be spectacular if they could ever, more than once in the history of these players, have their five most exciting and probably best players on the field at the same time. Pulisic, Reyna, Adams, McKinney, Dest have played together once ever. And they're, you know, they're the present and future of the U.S. national team. And they're not going to be on the field at the same time this time because Reyna and Dest are now out. McKinney has been in and out. Pulisic has been out. Pulisic's back, and now, you know, Dest is out instead. So that's really annoying. It would be amazing to actually see your best team on the field all at the same time. But without it, I don't really think the U.S. is a better team than Mexico. And they're going to have to do the same kind of hope your goalkeeper just absolutely stands on his head and you get on a counterattack kind of thing, which, I mean, it's worked before, but I'm not incredibly confident about that.
Who is your goalkeeper one at this point?
I mean, like, I understand it's weird choosing between a guy who can actually pass and maybe the best shot stopper in the United States. Because you're basically with the U.S. right now, they have to decide between the two functions of goalkeeping, and one is way better at one and one is way better at the other. So, like, I love Turner. I also know that when Turner's back there, you're going to end up just, you know, goal kicking 70 yards downfield and losing the ball immediately and coming back and not playing any sort of build up or possession game. And that's what you get with him. And then with Stephen, you don't get as good a shot stopper, but you have a guy who can actually pass to move the ball around and help the buildup happen. So I don't know. Like, I get it. Like, if you just want to lean, especially in a game like this, if you just lean on Turner because you're not going to have the ball anyway, that's fine. It probably makes the most sense. But against the teams you're actually supposed to beat and possess the ball against, maybe Stephen still makes more sense.
That's why they pay him the big bucks. Bill Connolly, advanced statistical analysis of the world around us. In our case, most notably college football. Bill Connolly, anything you want to promote before we let the fine people go?
Monday, Wednesday, Friday columns at ESPN.com.
ESPN.com. Bill Connolly, always on your side here. Thanks again for stopping on by.
Thank you.
Daniel, that's Bill Connolly from ESPN.com imparting his college football wisdom on us.
Yeah.
Don't forget to go on out to our website, solidverbal.com. Subscribe to this show. Read our three articles that we post on a ongoing weekly basis from Travis, from Connor, and from Bradley. Don't forget to go to verballers.com to find out more about our Patreon and how you can support the show. Become a super certified and premium Verballer. And of course, get access to all the bonus features that we have to offer. And last but not least, SolidSaturday.com. We do our live stream every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time.
And we did a playoff ranking reaction show on YouTube.com/the Solid Verbal. And if you want it in audio form, well, Verballers.com. There it is.
Daniel, I hope you enjoy your weekend. It's fun, as always, to talk with you, commiserate with you, share wisdom with you.
Oh, can't wait.
For that guy over there, my good friend, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrand, thank you so much for downloading, listening, supporting the show. We will be back after week 10. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.